Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, January 23rd, 2016. This is episode 1255. Oh, a little program note, by the way. We've just launched our Twit newsletter. So if you listen to this show or any of our Twit podcasts, subscribe. It's free, twit.tv/newsletter. The very first one comes out tomorrow, Sunday the 24th. So if you want the full complete set, you got to subscribe now. twit.tv/newsletter. And don't worry, we won't misuse your email address or anything like that. In fact, you have to double opt in. You have to click a link on your email to approve that subscription. And I think you're going to like it. I'm going to write a little bit for it. It'll be great. twit.tv/newsletter. Now, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado,
The Tech Guy Show.
The Tech Guy Podcast is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Right now, get your free expedited FedEx shipping when you go to ring.com/tech guy. And by PillPack, a full-service pharmacy that combines convenient packaging, modern technology, and personalized service to make your life easier. Visit PillPack.com/twit to save $20 on vitamins and OTCs when you transfer your prescriptions. And by NatureBox. NatureBox is dedicated to making smart, delicious snacking easy. They have over 100 ridiculously delicious snacks that get delivered directly to your doorstep. Visit naturebox.com/twit to get 50% off your first box now. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and all that jazz. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you know, you can call us still. You just use Skype. And we have listeners all over the world thanks to the internet. We live in the future here at the Tech Guy Labs, as you probably know. Who was it said? Was it Arthur C. Clarke? The future's already here. Some sci-fi writer. It's just not evenly distributed. Some people are a little farther ahead than others. We have in the studio with us, you know, I have an open studio policy. We love it. Listeners come by and we have 4 or 5 seats and you can sit and join me. And I know it's kind of weird, but if it makes you happy, it makes me happy. Because I love having an audience. Dajiro's here. He's here with his wife, but his wife couldn't make it in person. So he's brought her in as a robot. And now I do live in the future. This is a really cool device, which I bought when it first came out from a company called Double Robotics. And it's kind of like a Segway for an iPad, basically. If you imagine kind of a small, skinny Segway, it's got 2 wheels, can roll around autonomously because the person on the other end who we see, what's your wife's name? We see Ruka's head in the iPad screen, and she's got a camera, and she can see me, and she can speak. She's got a speaker, and she has a microphone, so she can hear us. If you think about it, the iPad really, was the technology that made this possible. And then, what's really cool is Ruka from far away can control the wheels on the robot, so she can wander around, go look at things. And by the way, Ruka, feel free to look at things and inspect the studio. It's really cool. I've been on the other end of this because we also have a Double Robotics. We have the first generation. It's been sitting kind of lonely in the corner. I feel kind of bad for it. You do tend to personify robots, don't you? Even if this robot doesn't look like a human, it just looks like a stick with wheels or broom with wheels. But as soon as you put the iPad in and you see a face, I feel like Ruka's right here. Hi, Ruka. That's wild. And the imagine what you could do with this, of course, you could go to museums, you could visit things, and I think this is really, really cool. Well, DJ and Ruka, I'm glad you're both here. And Ruka has a much more comfortable chair, however. we don't have the most comfortable chairs here in the studio, I should warn you. 8888 Ask Leo. I also feel like I'm in the future because I think I'm going to buy an electric car. You know, we got solar panels on the house because I felt like, you know, we should. We live in California and there's a lot of sun. Google has this really cool thing. It doesn't work everywhere, but it's kind of a sun map that will tell you what kind of, you know, how good your house would be for solar. It's called the Google Solar Map. I'm sorry, no, it's Project Sunroof. Project Sunroof. You can go there by going to google.com/get/sunroof. And it has a lot more addresses than it used to. And once you let's put in our studio, see if we should maybe we should get solar on the studio as well. So then it tells you, for instance, in our studio we have 1,749 hours of usable sunlight a year. That's based on weather patterns. There's a lot of space on our roof, 12,000 plus square feet. They can tell that based on 3D modeling of your roof and nearby trees. So there's actually a corner of the roof that wouldn't support solar panels because it's shaded, so they don't put them there. And then it gives you $14,000 estimated net savings with a 20-year lease. It's kind of a clever idea, isn't it? So wow. And then of course Google makes a little money on it because they have, if you click see solar providers, you can see people who have presumably paid for advertising. Yeah, it says there's a little, and you know, Google's at least upfront about this, sponsored. So in fact, the solar provider we use, SolarCity, isn't on this list, even though I know that they would be. But the paid advertisers are. Hey, that's fine. It lets you know kind of, and it even gives you costs, leasing versus loaning versus buying outright. And it includes tax incentives, federal and state. It's really clever. So we've got the solar panels on the house. I don't think we're saving that much money, but it doesn't matter. Even if you saved a dollar a month, you're doing a good thing, right? Because you're pumping electricity into the grid, clean, renewable electricity into the grid. I think that's great. So I'm happy about it. But now that I got the solar panels, I thought, well, I really should have an electric car, shouldn't I? That would be going all the way. So I'm looking at it. Then I will be living in the future. Maybe a 4K TV. And then, see, that's the problem with the future. It's a moving target, isn't it? You can never quite get to the future. It's always as Annie said, it's always a day away. It's always just a little bit beyond. But I like to try to get there a little earlier than the rest. It was 20 years ago, yesterday, January 22nd, 20 years ago, we entered the future. The New York Times, January 22nd, 1996. What do you think they did? They put up their first website. The New York Times began, nytimes.com, began putting a newspaper on the web 20 years ago. You look at a picture of it, it really does look kind of primitive. You know, I guess the web wasn't that capable in those days. And in a clear tip of the hat to the paper, up in the left-hand corner, it says, New Auto Classifieds. They probably didn't know that that was going to be the first thing that was going to die in the new internet era, Craigslist. Replacing classified ads for most people and really putting print papers in a deep bind. All the news that's fit to print. Of course, what is fit to print when you have an infinite website? You can have all the news that's not fit to print. 20 years of this day, January 22nd, we entered the future in publishing, newspaper publishing. I'm sure the Times even then thought, we got to do something about this internet. Something's got to happen. Looks like Apple is going to announce Now, this is one case where future shock is not a good thing. You know, you buy a computer, you buy a tablet, you buy a smartphone, and 3 seconds later, the new one comes out. That's not changed. That hasn't changed in 20 years. It was always, people would call and say, I got a new computer, but should I wait? Because I think the new one's always coming. New Apple Watch coming out in mid-March. What? Wait a minute. If you got the Apple Watch for Christmas, you're probably thinking, wait a minute. There'll be a new iPhone too, but lest you feel like things are moving too fast, the new iPhone really is the old iPhone. Apple, I think, decided that not everybody wants a 5-inch or a 5.5-inch phone. I like big phones. I cannot lie. But Apple has decided, we think, the rumor, and you know, Apple doesn't pre-announce, but the rumor is pretty good. It comes from a very good source that they're going to do a 4-inch iPhone based on the old iPhone 5S, couple-year-old model. No, actually, yeah, couple-year-old model, isn't it? But for people who want a smaller phone, it'll have, you know, many of the same features as the iPhone 5S. It'll be called the 5SE. But they'll also release an update to the Apple Watch, a new operating system, maybe new hardware. And then, get ready, they expect to do another one, according to the rumors, in September. What the what? All right, your call's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The motto of married men everywhere, you better jump. Leo Laporte, the tech... No, that's it, though. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I say that because I was talking to Heather. Heather's single, I'm married, and so we're comparing our lives. Heather Hammond, the Phone Ranger, is here. Hello, Phone Ranger.
Greetings.
Isn't this wild, having the robotic audience?
I love it.
I think a day will come when we'll have 7 or 8 of these
exactly.
In the studio. Nobody will come to Petaluma. We're in the middle of the wine country. Beautiful area, but a little remote. You send your robot.
We can fit more people in the audience. It'll be amazing. It's better for everyone.
I want a gaggle of robots. It'd be great. It'd be great. It'd be fun.
Oh, my God. We'll name them Leo's Robot Army.
We have two. We're getting there. I got one visitor and one of our own.
Right.
We should put another. We did, you know, when we first got this double robotics robot, we allowed audience members to sign into it and walk around the studio. Dr. Mom, who's in the audience, she lives in Long Island, signed in and walked around, visited the studio, bumped into things.
Oh, excellent.
It's like having a drunk robot in the studio. It was very strange. But this is, hey, the future. Do you feel like when you come here that you're kind of stepping into the future a little bit?
Yeah, a lot. I'm getting a jetpack before I leave today, right?
I wish. You've been lining up the calls. I see we have some wonderful people. Who should I begin with here?
We have got to help Danny in L.A.
Oh, it's Danny's song. Even though I got a computer, I can't keep the thing working. Hi, Danny.
Hi, I'm having a problem with my Retina MacBook that I got about last year.
Okay.
So, I'm running an older version of Photoshop. It's Photoshop Elements 10. And I've noticed even in other older applications that I'm running on here, the icons seem like a bit pixelated. They don't
yeah.
have high resolution as everything.
Yeah. So this is something that happens on the Retina display. It's nice. What Retina means is just a high-res display. An older software may not handle it properly. What Apple tries to do, and Apple really kind of created this some years ago, and now, of course, everybody's doing high-res displays and pretty much do the same thing. They do something called high DPI, dots per inch. And the way Apple kind of compensates for it is they display almost everything in so let's so your high resolution display is what is the resolution of it? I can't remember. 1440. I can't remember. But it's they cut it in half. So let's say your display, I have a Windows machine here. It's 3200 by 1800. That's very high resolution. But most of the time what it will do is try to represent things at 1600, that's half of 3200 by 900. Still 16 by 9, same you know aspect ratio, still fills the screen. But now you have 2 pixels per dot. 2 pixels, 2 dots, physical dots on the screen per dot on the screen. And that is fine, except that you might say, well, wait a minute, I paid for twice that resolution with my retina display. True, but then if you do that, you have issues come up. For one thing, if you forced, and you could do this, by the way, Danny, you could force your retina display Mac to display at the actual resolution of the screen, the physical resolution of the screen. You'll notice that the menus, the text gets really hard to read, the icons get it really tiny, everything's tiny. So by doubling it, they make everything visible. And then when you use Photoshop elements and you show a picture, the Mac is, I guess it's the software probably, somehow signals the Mac, look, I've got a high resolution item. Display this at the native resolution of the display. So you get the retina when you're looking at video, it's 4K video, or you're looking at images that are high resolution images. And this is kind of what you want, which is a usable display. But when you need the resolution, you get it all. My suspicion is that this is related to what you're seeing, which is issues with the presentation of icons. Probably also when you're in the program, it looks a little funky. And I'm not sure, it's an older program, so it doesn't understand the retina display. And I apologize because I'm not sure exactly how a program like Photoshop signals the display that, okay, here, this is high res. Maybe the display does it automatically. I'm not sure. One thing you could try, and it would certainly, and you're young, so maybe this would help, is to get the native resolution of your screen. So your screen I'm looking now is, if it's a 15-inch Retina MacBook Pro, 2880 by 1800, which means in the normal course of events, it's 1440 by 900 until you get to a high resolution issue. But there are ways to, not Apple-approved ways. You'll notice when you go to the system preference pane and you look at the displays, it doesn't really give you this high resolution, but there are ways to get the full resolution of it. And that's by using a third, normally what it says is something like best for display and then scaled. And the default is probably good, but there are ways to do this higher resolution with third party software. So there's one that I've used called Switch Res X. That's been around for a while. Switch Res X. It is essentially an alternative system preference pane. There's also Quick Res. And there's something called Retina Display Menu. I would take a look at Quick Res. Both of these are free. Actually, it was originally free. Quick Res is now $5, which seems fine. You probably won't find these in the App Store because Apple doesn't like people doing stuff like this. So you'll have to do a little quick Google search on Quick Res. Now, what this is going to do is going to switch your display into its highest native mode, which is much higher than you probably want, because as soon as you see it, you're going to say, I can't read the menus. I can't read the icons. But the icons won't be pixelated anymore. They'll look fine. They'll just be tiny. They're not getting blown up anymore. Older software probably doesn't do the one thing that I know newer software is supposed to do. Apple wants them to include a broader range of icons, for instance, so that they can Apple software can show the appropriate icon depending on the screen's resolution. So this isn't, you can live with a pixelated icon. I probably would. If you want to see what your screen is capable of all the time, you could use Quick Res. You're young. Maybe it won't bother you. I can't use it. It's so tiny. I can barely read. I have to hold the screen up to my face to read it. And mousing is hard because you've got to click on this little tiny point and stuff like that. So this is what Apple's done. And now everybody does this. If you get a Windows machine with that kind of resolution, as I have with my Dell XPS 13, for instance, I recently installed Linux on it. And Linux doesn't know about this. So Linux displays it at the native resolution. It says, you got a lot of dots. We'll use them all. And you have to really pixel peep. You almost want to use a magnifying glass to find the setting so you can set it to a higher resolution. That's not as good a solution as what Apple's done, which is kind of the software smart enough to know, okay, now use all the dots when it's a picture, when it's a video. Now use just half the dots when it's a screen display element. So it's just older software. It's not a bad thing. As long as the software works for you, if you can live with the cosmetic, the poor cosmetics, it's just that probably Photoshop Adobe didn't include all the icon sizes for the resolutions you've got. 8888 Ask Leo, and you would get better, you know, if you could get a newer version of Photoshop that knows about retina displays, it would be better, but I know it's expensive. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Look at that. They're going to close down. In 2 minutes, they're closing down travel in New York City. Look at that. Man. Times Square. Scott Wilkinson's here, home theater guru. By the way, this is a good day to stay indoors if you're on the in the Atlantic, mid-Atlantic area in the East Coast. They just closed New York City. I've never heard of literally. They just closed New York City. So, it was closed to travel as of a couple of minutes ago. I don't know what that
Yikes.
I don't know what that means. I guess you can go out the door and walk around, but no cars, no buses, no trains, no planes. Can you imagine? So stay home and watch TV.
That's right. Watch Twit TV.
Yeah, or watch a great movie. What about that one with Wilson, the guys in the tropics? You'd feel warm.
That's right. There you go. I'm liking that.
Scott is editor-in-chief at the AVS Forums, which is a great place to go if you want to know more about everything in audio and video. He also hosts our Home Theater Geeks podcast at twit.tv/htg. I have a call for you. You want to take it?
You bet. Happy to.
All right. Let's go to Gary. He's in Simi Valley. Hi, Gary.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm good. Scott Wilkinson's here. I think you wanted to ask about a TV.
Hey, Gary.
I've been waiting for this Vizio reference series to hit the market, and I can't find it anywhere.
You must have a lot of money, my friend.
Well, I've been saving, and I don't buy TVs but every 10 years.
It looks like an amazing TV. Scott, what is the Vizio R series?
The Vizio R series is really their top of the line. It is one of the first TVs to be available with high dynamic range, specifically Dolby Vision, which is being streamed from Vudu, at least, and if not other places. I think Netflix is going to get on board with that as well. So it's a beautiful TV. It uses quantum dots to achieve a wider color gamut and a higher dynamic range. It's really got all the latest technology in it. And, it's not tremendously expensive. I'm trying to look up now exactly what the price
is.
It's available.
I can pull it up for you. But what's interesting is that Vizio was until recently kind of a second tier TV set.
Or third tier, even.
You buy it at Costco or Sam's Club. But it was good, and we recommended them as inexpensive but decent TVs.
Yep.
This is their attempt to show that they can do as good a TV as anybody.
As anybody.
Yeah.
That's right. At least as good an LCD TV as anybody.
Now, you're not going for the 120-inch one.
No.
Because that one is prohibitively expensive, right?
That's $130,000, as I recall.
Most people, that's prohibitively expensive.
But the 65-inch...
It's only six grand. It's $5,000.
Yeah.
And that's list, which means you'll probably find it for less at Sam's Club.
Exactly. But the real question is it now available? And if so, where can you buy it? I think if you go to the Vizio website, Vizio.com.
It's a special order, they say.
Right.
Okay.
What is that? Thank you for your interest.
Well, when you go to that special order, they give you a form to fill out, and they'll send you information when it becomes available.
So it's not being sold yet, I guess, huh?
I guess not.
They also say in limited quantity, which means maybe one of those things that, you just don't... You're just not going to be able to get
it. It's a good question. I hadn't looked at it lately about whether or not it was actually, you could actually buy it and get it delivered and have it in your home. I'm going to have to contact Vizio about that because, that's been at least, I think they showed it at first 2 years ago at CES 2 years ago.
Yeah. So maybe it's one of those things where they say, see, we can do it, but they don't.
Right.
Oh, man, I hope not. Because it's such a beautiful TV in so many ways.
A glossy screen on it?
Oh, I'm sure it does.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. You still have to be careful of light in the room, particularly like a window or a lamp directly across from it so that that gets reflected in the screen.
You don't want a glossy screen, Gary?
Well, I prefer it not.
Because of the reflectivity?
Yeah.
Scott, why are screens glossy? I think that's a big issue for a lot of people. But
it sure is. And it used to not be so much of a problem on LCD TVs as it was on plasmas. Plasmas were that way by default. But LCDs very often had more of a matte screen. But my understanding is that the glossy screen is a byproduct of how they're doing screens now to get deeper blacks, because LCD, as you know, has always had a problem with getting really deep blacks, and that's what you really want for a great picture. And I think that as they've developed other screen technologies to get deeper blacks from the physical characteristics of the screen itself, it becomes more glossy.
So I've been looking around, and Vizio said we'll have them shipping by the end of 2015.
Right.
I guess not.
Yeah, right.
So let me ask you this, Scott. Should Gary maybe consider another model? I mean, if he's willing to pay $6,000.
You know, originally I was going to buy an OLED until I saw a couple of bad things. And one was the burn-in, and the other was the half-life of the brightness was like 5 years.
I've had my OLED for 3 years now.
And at least 3 years.
And more than 3 years. No, about 3 years.
Is it 3 years?
Yeah, because you came over.
Flies.
Yeah, I know. You came over to adjust it.
Yep.
About almost exactly 3 years ago. And I think it was fairly new at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it I see no evidence of burn-in and brightness. I still feel – now, it could be as it slowly dims, you don't notice it. Mm. Isn't it supposed to be, though, that the blue or purple – supposed to dim quicker than the other colors, and that was
the blue. That was one of the problems. The blue pixel, blue subpixel, is dims sooner than the others.
I have not noticed that, because that you would notice. It would look a little weird. It would the blues.
Yeah,
would,
oh,
blues
look
would be
really
fading
weird.
Out. Yeah. So
yeah,
I think it still looks very good. And that's 3 years ago. I imagine any issues they've had have been solved. Didn't the LG OLED do very well in the shootout?
It did exceedingly well. It won. Even with the non-uniformity issues, and which they have addressed, and the 2016 models now are the uniformity issue is in fact well addressed, and things are looking
but
mighty
it's
fine.
It's going to be expensive. That's going to be more than six, right?
Well, here's the deal: the new 2016 OLEDs from LG, they've got one that they've announced the price on. It's the E6 version, and the 65 inch is $7,000, but if you can wait till probably spring, they have their entry-level B6 series, which they haven't announced a price yet, but it'll be a lot less than that, I'm sure. And
Scott. Wait a minute. This just in. $5,000 on the suggested retail price on the LG site for their 2016 65-inch is $6,000, exactly the same as the reference. Now, this is the 65-inch flat OLED 4K smart TV for 2016. Is that not it?
Do you see the model line? Is it B6, E6?
It's 65EF9500.
Okay, that's last year's model.
Oh, it says new for 2016 on it.
I know, but
those bad people. Okay. That's the other thing that's changed. 2016 has brought us a standard for 4K and for HDR
for high dynamic range. If you can wait till the spring and get an LG OLED with high dynamic range with the standard in it, man, oh man, that's the bee's knees. That's the way to go.
The bee's knees. You heard it here first, Gary. It's the bee's knees. And it's so crisp and fine, you can actually see the bee's knees.
The bee's knees, exactly.
Yeah, I didn't think he was that old.
He sounds old when he says that. Now you're cooking with gas, Gary.
That's right.
So, maybe, I don't know, waiting for the R is not the best thing ever. Although, you know, I was really intrigued by the R as well. But
I am, too.
But it's a LED backlit LCD, right?
Correct.
Even though it's using quantum dots and all that new stuff.
Yeah,
right. And it's full array backlighting. It's really, really good. It's as good as an LCD is going to get, in my opinion.
Thank you, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Liam Neeson says, The future is here. He says. He's the man from the future. He says it right here.
See, well, then it must be true.
You want to see the future? Let's see. Let's
what
see
is the future?
I don't know. Liam Neeson knows. He has some very specific skills. Ooh, he's looking at you. RSA Films presents Liam Neeson, Man from the Future.
This thing will change everything.
February 7th, the OLED comes out. Boy, that was a short. It was very short. They couldn't afford more than 30 seconds of Liam's time.
Of Liam Neeson. You know, LG, for the first time ever, is doing a commercial for the Super Bowl.
That's probably what this is about.
That's probably what that is.
Yeah.
Ridley Scott, I think, is the director.
Oh.
So they're making a kind of a big deal about
it.
So when you're watching the Super Bowl.
This is the TV to wait for.
It is, in my opinion, absolutely. No question about it. No question about it. That thing is awesome.
Well, now that I'm buying a Tesla, I will be buying a Zenith TV. Maybe a Westinghouse.
Yes.
I've decided to go for the car, not the TV. I feel like it's let's make a deal. The car has a nice TV in the car.
I'm sure that's true.
All right, man. Scott, I'm going to give you the helm.
Thank you so much.
Yep. And I will show you a lovely image.
Oh, good.
Involving a timer.
There is a timer. Thank you so much.
See, you have very little time left, so go ahead.
Yeah, it's all right. UJ, does it not have an anti-glare filter on it? Yeah, it does. But again, the screen, I don't know the exact details of how the screen works to reduce the black, but a side effect of that is that it gets glossy. There's not too much you can do about it, I'm afraid. Web 7749, does a higher refresh rate on the larger on a larger screen matter? I have a 55 and things look blurry. Yeah, well, that's the nature of the beast. You can turn on frame interpolation, and that will make things look a lot sharper, but it will also induce the soap opera effect, making movies in particular look like they were shot on video. So if you don't mind that, then you can get it a lot sharper by turning on frame interpolation. If you hate that, then you have to live with the blurriness. And on a larger screen, yeah, it would probably look a little worse. Let's see. Dr. Mom is saying, I'm glad that they seem to be shrinking bezels on TVs. Now I can get a 42, 43-inch TV into the space I have for the current 40-inch one. That's exactly right, Dr. Mom. They are shrinking the bezels, and I think that's a great thing as well. I totally agree. Hey, Sybil. Good to see you. This is I'm kind of disappointed. I had hoped the Vizio R series would be out by now, and I kind of thought it was, but we just demonstrated, it's not yet. I have to call Vizio and say, what's going on here? Come on, you guys, get us that Vizio reference series. You know what I mean? So if anybody else, no one else has a question, I only have 50 seconds left. I guess, Battlecam's asking about Hisense 4K HDR TVs. Really good price. That's right. They are really good price. Hisense being one of the two big Chinese companies. They're actually more than two, but the two that I focused on were Hisense and TCL at CES. And Hisense now markets the Sharp brand as well. And they had some pretty interesting stuff at CES as well. So, Hisense is a company to keep watch of, and I will certainly be doing that.
We've been buying TCLs, but the cheap TCLs.
Yeah.
All right.
They're good. They're expensive ones, looking really good.
You want to stick around for the top of the hour?
Sure.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Mm-hmm. Ain't no cure for the wintertime blues, I'll tell you. I hope you're hunkering down if you're in the mid-Atlantic states and staying warm. My friend New Media Jim, who's a news photographer, sent pictures on his Instagram feed of the Jefferson Memorial and the Lincoln Memorial all snowed in. Like, it was beautiful. No footprints. I guess he got up really early in the morning. Just deep snow in Washington, D.C. Wow. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. We were talking about that LG OLED TV. That's Scott Wilkinson says, our home theater guru. The TV to watch for 2016 when it comes out. It's not out yet. But he pointed out that LG has bought a Super Bowl ad. So with apparently with Liam Neeson, and Liam is billed as the man from the future. Hey, that's my. Hey, that's me. Knock it off, Mr. Neeson. I'm the man from the future. Anyway, that'll be interesting to watch during the Super Bowl. See what they announce. The information on their website right now, the LG website, is about just very scant. Just a sneak peek of the man from the future. It's LG's first ever Super Bowl ad. That means they think they've got something. Back to the phones we go, and Rick is in Laverne, California. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I've got a problem. I have a HP Pavilion G7. It's about 3 years old. Twice in the last month, I have had all of my files, internet history, Outlook, office programs, everything disappears.
Wow.
I'm now, wondering why.
Yeah, really. No doubt. So all the data, all the stuff you want is gone.
Everything.
Now, is your data, like your documents, like things you word processing, stuff like that, does that also disappear?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm thinking this is the contents of your home folder. You know, when you Windows, ever since Windows XP for the consumers and NT for the businesses, has been what we call a multi-user operating system designed from the ground up for multi-users. In the early days of Windows, all the way up to Windows 98, there was the impression that you had multiple user capability, but you didn't really. Modern versions of Windows, different, you know, you log in and each login gets its own home directory with my documents, my pictures, and all of that. And that is inaccessible to anybody else on the computer. That's the idea of a multi-user system. If for some reason your home directory should get damaged, that's the exact symptom you'd get. Any customizations, any data, your internet history, your bookmarks, all of that's in your home directory. So
Okay. You're
logging in. Now, one of the things I would look at is if somehow you're logging into a different account or the accounts get switched around. Do you have other people using that computer?
I don't. There's only one account. That's the owner account. But actually now what's happening is I have Carbonite, thankfully.
Oh, okay. So you're not losing anything. That's good.
Right. So so this time I have run restore, but I can't get it to load back onto the desktop. When I turn the computer on, I get a note that says you have been logged on with a temporary profile.
That's why. So the temporary profile is exactly that. It won't have any of your information.
So why does that happen when I don't have multiple accounts?
Well, which version of Windows is it?
It's a Windows 7.
It's basically creating a guest account for you. You're logging in as a guest account. And I'm not sure what's happening. It could be a hard drive error or it could be a Windows error. When you log in, do you see preparing your desktop? Does that sound familiar?
It doesn't say repairing, but it says preparing your desktop.
Yeah. It's getting you. That's creating a new account, basically.
Great.
Yeah, great. Well, the good news is you probably still have your data. It's just that you're not logging in. It's not letting you log in to your account. Now, there are all sorts of, this happens. There are all sorts of potential reasons it could happen. It could be a simple error to the access control list or, you know, this is the information Windows uses for logins. It could be, like a hard drive error on one sector could do this, or it could be a more massive hard drive problem. In which case, I'm so glad you have a backup, right?
Me too.
Yeah, this is, if you look around on the internet, you will see, people who have disappearing profiles, that kind of thing, and that's exactly what's happening to you. I'm not sure. It's hard for me to tell from here what the cause is. The most common error, by far, like more than half the time on a computer, is hard drive failure. And the problem is it doesn't manifest as a hard drive issue. You know, if your machine wouldn't boot, you'd go, oh, I guess there's a problem with a hard drive. Or if a file were corrupted, you say, oh, I guess there's a problem with a hard drive. But this is such a weird error, but you can get other ones where the machine acts very slow, for instance. And almost all the time they're caused by hard drives that are just not reliable or portions of them have gone flaky and that kind of thing. We don't want to do is delete your actual profile, even though you've got a good backup, thank goodness. You feel fairly confident your Carbonite backup's complete and up to date?
Yes.
All right, good. Thank goodness. You could run check disk, or better than check disk would be something like SpinWrite. It's $90. It's expensive. To go through the disk and see if there are bad sectors, because I think almost certainly that's what's going on. These sectors could be hardware failures. In other words, an indicator you need a new drive, or it could just be software failures. That happens all the time. In other words, those would be fixable. So if I happen to have a copy of SpinWrite around, I would, which I do because anybody who works on hard drives should, I would run SpinWrite on this disk. And almost certainly what would happen is you'd find some errors. What SpinWrite does is it doesn't go through the operating system. It goes at a very low level, looks sector by sector at the disk. If it finds sectors that are hard to read or unreadable, it will keep trying until it reads it. Move the data off. That's the key. Mark that sector bad. And by doing that, sector by sector, could actually make that disk completely usable, recoverable. You would turn on the machine. You would log into your account. Everything would be normal. That almost, in my mind, without having physical access to your machine, that sounds like what's going on. Now, the easiest thing for you to do would be buy a new hard drive. And the good news is they're cheap. And restore your data from Carbonite. And this problem would go away. But I'm almost certain it's a hard drive issue. Certainly, it's something gone wrong with Windows. Another thing you could try if you have the Windows install disk is a repair. Maybe it's just a Windows DLL got corrupted. You know, the bad sector was in the middle of some software. Repairing Windows often will fix issues caused that way. And that's easy to do if you boot into the system installer and go through this process right before you actually install it. It will say, wait, whoa, you've got a copy of Windows on here. Do you want me to install a different one, a new one, or would you like me to repair the existing one? Press R to repair. Repair scans through the Windows system files, updates and replaces any that are damaged or missing. Sometimes that's sufficient. All of these issues come up are fixable by a good technician with the right software tools. But good is the hard part. There's a lot of bad guys who don't know what they're doing out there. We're going to put in the show notes, the chat room is coming up with some interesting links from various sources about this specific issue, about Windows 7 always logs on with temporary profile. This is a Tom's Hardware article. And step-by-step instructions, which involve registry editing, always makes me nervous, but it might be the solution. It's certainly a problem that's happened to others. I've seen this before. This will be a good article to take a look at. So if you can get a computer to browse to techguylabs.com. And we'll put a link to this article and several others the chat room suggests for this problem. A corrupt registry is another very common Windows problem. The registry was a very bad idea. All the settings for Windows, starting with Windows XP, are stored in didn't 95 have a registry? I guess it did. Are stored in a giant hairball of a file that is, it's not text, it's a binary file that is very easy to corrupt, can be really huge. It's very easy to corrupt, and unfortunately, if it gets damaged, it's very hard to fix, safely anyway. We'll put it all in the show notes. TechGuyLabs.com. That's a great resource. No fee. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Windows 3 started the 3.1.1 was the registry, huh? I felt like it was 95, but I don't remember. No, because 3.1.1 was just a DOS shell. All right, Scotty.
All righty.
All yours, my buddy. I'm going to put this,
thank you so
put
much.
This little put clock up, display up there
put
for
up
you.
Put up a little clock. 490 seconds to go. So, yeah, we've been talking in the chat room about looking at TVs in showrooms like Best Buy or Costco, something like that. And I think it was Logan Five saying that the Samsung looked better. Flesh tones looked better. And you know, that may be. That's great. But what I just typed was that if the flesh tones look really good under Klieg lights, you know, these gigantic bright lights overhead, then they, if you use the same settings at home, they may very well not look very good because your lighting conditions are completely different. So I really recommend not judging picture quality from what it looks like in a store. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. The conditions, unless you live in a showroom, then it's not going to look the same when you get it home. And you're going to want to get a disc. Somebody else in the chat room asked me about setting up their TV and how do they calibrate it. You can't. I distinguish between the words calibrate and setup. Calibrate implies using a meter and software, and you have to have quite a bit of training in order to do it right, and that's expensive. Or you can hire somebody for some hundreds of dollars to do it. But you can set up your TV, the five basic picture controls, contrast, brightness, color, tint, and sharpness, using a disc like Spears and Munsell HD Benchmark or Joe Kane's Video Essentials HD Basics or Disney World of Wonder or Wow. Or you can go on AVS Forum and download AVS HD 709, which is a free program. And any one of those will let you set contrast, brightness, color, tint, sharpness to optimize those controls on the TV. And that'll get you 70-80% of the way towards the best that that TV can do. To get that extra 20-30%, you need to hire somebody or take all the training and invest in a lot of equipment. So I don't necessarily recommend that to most folks. The other thing Lawn Dog and I have been talking about is the audio coming out of a TV's optical port. Optical audio output, right? So what a lot of people do is they take their source device, like a Blu-ray player or a Roku or something like that, or several of them, and connect them directly to the TV via HDMI, using the TV as the HDMI switcher, and then taking the optical output of the TV, the audio, and sending that to their sound system. The problem with that is that many TVs take a 5.1 channel audio soundtrack and down mix it to two channels before sending it out the optical out. And the weirdest part is it's almost impossible to predict whether your TV is going to do that or not. I haven't seen it in specs. TV makers don't say anything about it. You just have to try it, and maybe it works and maybe it doesn't. More often than not, in my experience, it doesn't. It just comes out two channel. So I don't recommend generally that you use your TV as your HDMI switcher, that you have an AV receiver with several HDMI inputs. Use that as the switcher and select what you want to watch on the AV receiver, and then one HDMI cable to the TV, and you don't have to change the TV's inputs at all. That way you're assured of getting 5.1 or 7.1 or Dolby Atmos or whatever it happens to be. Yes, Logan Five, you could equip your living room with those super bright lights. Yes, you could. And then it would look the same in your living room as it does on the show floor. Hey, Emily the Strange, good to see you. Web 7749, good question. Should we have the backlight of an LCD TV all the way up? Same with contrast? Answer is generally no. Once again, that's probably the settings that are in the TV when it's on the showroom floor, but it's definitely not generally what you want at home. The backlight merely controls the overall brightness of the TV. It won't change the white level and black level. It'll move them both simultaneously, basically, optically speaking. And I generally turn mine down. That's a sort of a comfort thing and an ambient light thing. More than anything else, if you do watch TV with a lot of ambient light, yeah, turn the backlight up. If you're in a dark room, turn it down. The contrast setting should be set with one of these discs, Disney Wow, Spears and Munsell HD Benchmark, so on, because that is an internal setting in the TV that determines how it deals with the signal coming in. The backlight, that's not true. but the contrast setting, it is. And so you want to set that properly so that it deals with that incoming signal properly. And that's generally not going to be all the way up. Because if you set the contrast all the way up, you're going to do something called clipping whites. And so if you have white detail in the upper end of the brightness range of the signal, that's all going to get lost. It's all going to just become a solid blob of white. This is particularly evident in snow scenes, stuff like that. So you want to set the contrast properly, and it's generally not going to be maxed out. Backlight is to taste, sort of, is how that how I sort of say that. Let's see. Let's see here. Web 4852. Like, do they say that exactly word for word? Will they say exactly what they have, HDR 10 or Dolby Vision? Yes, that they will say. That's a different subject altogether. They will say whether or not they do Dolby Vision, certainly, because if they do it, they want to tout it. And we saw quite a few TVs at CES this year that can do both Dolby Vision and HDR 10, which is what I've been hoping for, because, you know, some content's going to come in using one of them. Some content's going to come in using the other. And if it, depending on how the Dolby Vision was encoded, and Dolby Vision has some options in that regard, then if you have an HDR 10 set without Dolby Vision and it gets a Dolby Vision signal, it might do nothing with it, and you'll only see standard dynamic range. And vice versa. The Vizio reference series is a good example. It can only decode Dolby Vision. Now, if the Dolby Vision signal has HDR 10 as its base layer, holy smokes, I'm starting to tear my hair out, then you will see high dynamic range. But if it doesn't, then you won't. So that's a bit of a problem. Mike Heiss. Hey, Mike, good to see you. ARC, audio return channel over HDMI, is, as I recall, PCM and not bitstream, so users may not get everything. That's exactly right. That's a slightly different thing than what we were just talking about in terms of optical output, which is almost certainly PCM decoded, as opposed to ARC, audio return channel, which basically sends audio back along the same HDMI cable that is sending video to the TV from the receiver. And I don't know whether that's bitstream or PCM. That's a very good question. Joy, I've only got 26 seconds left. Joy Tiki, what does the dynamic setting represent on TV settings? It's the picture mode you do not want to use. It's the one they use in the showroom. So do not use dynamic mode.
Thank you, Scott. Why, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches and all that jazz. 8888. Ask Leo. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're in New York City right now, you got nothing to do. They just canceled all the Broadway shows tonight. The travel ban is on. Stay home and listen to the radio. I'll be here. I'll keep you company. The only people on the streets of New York are TV news reporters, and they're everywhere. You can't get away from them. I'm standing here on the corner of Broadway and Madison Avenue. Let's go to Jay in Providence, North Carolina. You getting a little snow there, Jay?
We've gotten some, not even half of what they said that was going to come down, though. Probably like 6 inches total.
Still, for North Carolina, that's a lot, right?
Yeah, for Central, which is where I am, over toward Wilkesboro and points west, they would be laughing. They are laughing at us.
You know, the bad thing about snow, even a few inches in an area where you don't usually get it, is drivers don't know what to do. They're like cats seeing snow for the first time. They go, the road, it's white.
Yes, that sounds like Greensboro nearby.
What can I do for you?
Well, I'm wondering, with the increase in the number of people who offer apps online, and I'm kind of, as the time goes by, I'm kind of getting more and more curious about different apps, trying them out and whatnot.
Right.
I wonder if there's any kind of extra precaution I need to take, since these app developers aren't nearly as well known as people like Apple and Mozilla. I mean, I trust them, but I don't know. I don't want to just totally rule them out because I don't recognize the name, but I feel like I need to take an extra.
You know, this is that's a great question because I don't know how old you are, but I'm old enough to remember the days where one of the greatest things about a personal computer was the variety of shareware and freeware. You'd go to a user group meeting and there'd be a disk librarian in the back of the auditorium with hundreds of disks you could borrow and try software out. It was very exciting times. Of course, now it's changed a lot. First of all, we didn't have any security concerns back then. We sure do now. That's one. Maybe overblown. For all of the talk we'd make about security these days, I don't know a whole lot of people who've had problems. And boy, you'd think I'd know them all because I'm the tech guy, right? I get all the calls. It's not as common as one might think, based on how much we talk about it. Yet you want to protect yourself. But the good news is the major operating systems, Windows and Macintosh operating systems, Android and iOS operating systems, and we really have to include those now, those mobile operating systems, have come a long way in terms of protecting you. For instance, if you use a Mac, there's a wonderful tool that Apple started shipping a couple of versions ago that everybody should take advantage of that protects you against rogue developers. It's called Gatekeeper, and it's on by default. You can actually check the security settings on your Macintosh and see what the setting is. There are three settings for Gatekeeper. The highest security setting would be only allow apps from the Mac App Store. Then you have the assurance that Apple's looked at them, that the developer is known, and Apple has approved the app. That's a little more restrictive than I'd like to be. I mean, I do want to encourage developers to create software. So the middle one is great, and I wish actually Windows would do. They're doing something similar, which I'll talk about in a second, but not quite as good as this. The second setting is Mac App Store and identified developers, and this is the default setting, the setting I recommend most people use. If a developer goes to Apple, gets a certificate, and identifies itself, then Apple says, okay, we'll open your software. And it's easy to get. Most developers do it. By doing that, you kind of have some – nobody's going to be a rogue developer if they're – I can call them. I can go visit them. Or the FBI can go visit them. So these – by virtue of the fact that they're identified, I think are mostly safe, although there is an exception, which I'll talk about in a second. And then finally, the setting I don't recommend is the setting how it used to be, which is you can get apps anywhere you want. On iOS, you don't even have a choice. Unless you jailbreak your phone, you have to buy from the App Store. Again, same kind of assurance. Android, they have a checkbox that's hidden in the settings where you could download software from anywhere. But Android, generally, as default setting, you have to get it from the Google Play Store. Maybe not as highly regulated as the Apple Store, but still regulated. And mobile, by the way, mobile operating systems do a very good job of keeping bad guys out. Windows has a similar but not quite so draconian policy. They do have an app store, which very few people use because the apps are so limited. Windows 10 might change that over time. But in general, the kind of Windows is more like it used to be, where anything goes and you can install anything you want. So in that, are you using Windows, Jay?
Actually, I have El Capitan.
You're golden. I would say this is probably – Gatekeeper is probably the most significant security innovation out there in the last few years. It's just a great way of doing things. If you are not – in order to install an app from somebody that is not certified by Apple, you have to right-click on the apps. You have to go through some steps. Right-click on the app, select open. You have to know that that's there, and it'll warn you several times. That's great. And in general, if you stick to that middle setting in Gatekeeper and El Capitan or Yosemite, I think it even goes previous to that. I think it was three generations of OS X have had this. You're good. They're doing a lot of other stuff. People may not know, but Apple and Microsoft both have anti-malware detection software built into their operating system, which they update without announcing it. Microsoft updates it at part of their second Tuesday updates every month. Apple does it without anybody knowing. Apple just pushed out a security update for iOS, by the way, that does fix some known security holes. So that's the other thing to do, is to make sure your operating system is locked down and anything that goes on the internet is locked down. But you're right. Installing apps is the most dangerous thing you do, because if the app developer is malicious, he can, you know, you're giving him or her permission to do anything they want to your system, including install a keystroke logger, install a RAT, a remote access Trojan that lets them turn on the camera and microphone. There's all sorts of bad stuff they can do if you install an app. Now, I mentioned there's a way around this kind of clever certification that somebody just did recently in the App Store, which is offer a certified app that people downloaded, but then behind the scenes download another uncertified malicious app. That has, by the way, been fixed, and Apple has fixed, patched that, but that's one of the reasons you want to get those patches all the time. So it's a great question. I think you're right that you should be careful. On OS X, I think you don't have to worry quite so much. Just stick to apps that open when you double-click them, as long as your gatekeeper is set to that middle setting, and you'll be safe. On Windows, it's a little more difficult. Windows is kind of more like Android in that respect. You can very easily download malicious apps and run them. By the way, no antivirus will protect you against that, because an antivirus can't really stop you from doing what you want to. Otherwise, you'd be really annoyed. There are ways on Windows to be more secure, things like Sandboxy, which sandbox every app. I think Microsoft's eventually going to do that. They separate the app from the rest of the operating system and from the hard drive and so forth. And this is what mobile apps kind of do. And you have to ask permission if you're an application to access the hard drive or access files or modify system files, that kind of thing. That's a good way to work. That's what mobile operating systems do, as you know. And I think that's the right way to do it. I suspect all of our desktop apps will, applications and operating systems will do that soon. No one's really truly safe. There's no such thing as 100% security, but I'm here to tell you, it's also not as bad as you might think if you read just the headlines. For the most part, these companies are doing a very good job protecting us. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today brought to you by Ring, the Ring Video Doorbell. Gots to love the Ring. In fact, already a couple of times today, my Ring Video Doorbell has rung. You know, it's even rings my Apple Watch, which is, I mean, you don't have to have it, but it's really great. When somebody's at my door, my watch rings. Wherever I am on the internet, my iPhone rings, my Android phone rings. I originally got the Ring Video Doorbell because I couldn't hear the doorbell very well. We had kind of junky chimes. It was a simple install. This thing is so easy. I'm not a handyman, but what's nice is the Ring Video Doorbell comes with all the things you need to install it. This is the doorbell itself. Let me show you. It's really cool because it has, you install this panel. All I did was remove the old doorbell, two wires coming out of the door jamb, trimmed them through there, tied them down there. Then you hook this onto it. It's got a special Torx bit screw here that prevents theft. And now your doorbell has been upgraded. Your doorbell still rings in your house if you have a wired doorbell. You don't need a wired doorbell, by the way. This has a lithium-ion battery, rechargeable. See the USB cord? So you can actually add a doorbell to anywhere, that even if it doesn't have a doorbell. But what's nice is when my Ring Video Doorbell rings, so does my phone, so does my tablet. So I know somebody's at the door. And then, better yet, because it's got a high-def camera in there and a microphone and speaker, I can talk to whoever's at the door and respond to them. So that has some real advantages. When I get packages delivered, I can say, hello, who's there? About $200, but you're going to get free shipping, FedEx shipping, expedited when you go to ring.com/tech guy. ring.com/tech guy. And so you could see, here's all activity. Here's rings. This is when people have rung the doorbell. And I can, if it's a missed ring, it'll say missed ring. If I answered it, I could say accepted. And then this is where motion occurs. So here's somebody ringing my doorbell. I love this. It's so cool. You get video that you can watch. Oh, yeah. Looks like that's the FedEx guy, UPS guy with a package. See, he's got his little thing. So I can answer the doorbell and say, yeah, could you just leave the package right there? Yep, see, he just left the package. Look at that. That's what I did. I said, leave the package. I could see my front door anytime. I love it. When there's motion, I know. You could set the motion detector to be more or less sensitive. This is such a great technology. Now, one thing, I know you probably saw those articles about the issues with the security issues of the Ring. Ring, this is so cool, and I didn't know this, has an automatic over-the-air update. So you should know, Ring is absolutely secure. When they heard about this issue, they immediately patched all Ring doorbells. They're all secure. You don't have to worry about your Wi-Fi password being poached on your Ring video doorbell. It's completely secure. It works with your Wi-Fi, iOS, and Android. Motion detection. You've got a camera, speaker. It is awesome. Ring.com/tech guy. Somebody tweeted me the other day. He said, I should find that video. We caught a bad guy who was trying to rob my house. Got him arrested because I had good, crystal clear video for my Ring video doorbell. Ring.com/tech guy. I'm kind of like Pavlov's dog. Whenever I hear that sound, I watch. He goes, there's somebody at your door. I love that. Leo Laporte, the semi-charmed geek. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. Musical director Nathan Staten, spinning the platters. I think he actually uses platters. He said the other day, actually it was this morning, he said, I got to eject the CD. What? Really? CDs? Really? 88. See, I live in the future. We don't have CDs in the future. We don't have DVDs. We got nothing. It's all digital. It's all bits, man. It's all bits. Just downloading the bits. John, Santa Cruz, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hey, Leo. Long time listener. Go way back to, I think I first heard you on Lawyers on the Line, some lawyer program on ANPR or something. And it's certainly Laporte on Computers on KGO.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we go back. I've been doing, it's kind of, you know, you're getting old when you say something like, I've been doing this man and boy. 20, since 1991, how many years is that? It's a lot. 25 years almost.
Yeah.
It'd be 25. Wow. 25 years this year. And that's not on the radio. That's answering computer questions on the radio. I've been on the radio since 1976.
What were you answering back then?
I started as a DJ. A lot of people started in college as a DJ, spinning the platters, doing the vinyl thing. And worked for years as a DJ, eventually had the good sense to become a talk show host. And for a while, I was doing general talk. But, you know, politics got me down. And that was then. Imagine how I feel now. Politics is not, if you want a calm demeanor in life, don't be a political talk show host. I would go home with stomach aches. So this is good because I love technology, always have. This was always my hobby since the 70s. And so be able to talk about something that is important and meaningful, but doesn't involve, the most angry people get is, I'm a Mac guy and you're a Windows guy. How could you be on Team Windows or whatever? or the other way around.
That's a good segue to my question.
Okay.
I'm like a lifelong Windows guy or PC guy. Mm-hmm. And I have an iPhone 6, and I have a seemingly small keyboard issue that actually keeps me away from almost all other Apple products. I won't even buy I wanted to buy a MacBook Air, but I didn't want to do it because it doesn't have a delete key. The delete key is so ingrained in how I type on a QWERTY keyboard. It's just second nature to me.
You know, they are phasing that out along with the print screen and the pause key. These are old and keys that come from the old days of computing. In fact, a real PC keyboard will have some, it's like, break. And, some of the keys on a true PC keyboard, if you get the full keyboard, are really antiquated. They're obsolete, and they are even Microsoft starting to phase those out. But you're right. And for Mac, people are probably going, what is he talking about? On a Windows keyboard, there is both a backspace and a delete key. And what you have to do, for instance, let's really, really trivial example. But in Windows, if you have an icon, you want to delete it, you select it and you press the delete key, not the backspace key. You delete it. That makes sense. It's delete. On a Mac, you have to press command backspace to delete it because it's a delete. So they have figured out ways to duplicate the functionality. What do you use the delete key for?
It's really frustrating on, like, an iPhone. Like, let's say
let's say...
By the way, this is confusing from Apple.
A long URL into an address bar. You have to delete something towards the end. To do this, you got to click and hold and drag at the very end of the text. You know.
Well, that's... Like, now, remember, a Mac is not the same as an iPhone. It has a much more natural keyboard than the iPhone does. Don't think that the iPhone keyboard represents the Macintosh keyboard.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like the iPhone keyboard either. But I really have never had any issue going back and forth between Windows and Macintosh keyboards. They're not that different. And by the way, the backspace key on Macintosh to add confusion is called delete, but it's really a backspace key.
Yeah. It's not a forward delete.
It's not a forward delete. And Unix heads will go, well, wait a minute, it's really, you know, that's Command H. that's not backspace, and, you know, on and on. I think you get, I don't know, I haven't thought about that probably ever, and certainly don't think about it when I, and I go back and forth all the time. In fact, I lately have been using a lot of Linux, so I go from Linux to Windows to Macintosh, and I never think about it. You just kind of get used to, oh, yeah, that's Command Backspace, or Command Delete if you want to delete an icon, things like that.
Are there any ways to add that to an iOS or...
Well, you could get a Windows keyboard. You can get, yeah, I mean, there are third-party keyboards. On iOS, it's different. But on a Macintosh, if you're going to use a computer, you can use Logitech, and many people make full keyboards that have all the keys on it and map completely normally to the Macintosh. On iOS, there are third-party keyboards. And this was a big deal when they introduced this in iOS 8. Unfortunately... the way Apple's done it is fairly annoying. And so I initially did install SwiftKey and Swipe and other keyboards I've used on Android and loved, because the Apple keyboard still gives me, indigestion. It's just I mistype things all the time on it. Unfortunately, because these third-party keyboards are treated as second-class citizens on an iOS device, the Apple keyboard pops up when you type passwords, and it doesn't. Even in the latest iOS, it's still, you know, a little flaky. So I stopped using it. You just kind of have to grin and bear it with iOS. You're going to have to. There is a backspace key, but it's a back, not a forward. It's funny. Yeah, you're the first person I've ever heard of complain about this.
if the frustration is if the cursor ends up in the wrong place,
right.
And I'm trying to replace it with my giant sausage.
Yeah, no, I have sausage fingers too, so I'm sympathetic. They did add a nice feature with the latest iPhones because of this new Force Touch technology. And maybe, do you have a 6S or a 6S Plus?
No, it's a 6.
Okay, so one of the things they've done, which does kind of answer this, you know, on all the other iPhones, you hold, press and hold, and you get a magnifying glass, and you can move the cursor around. On the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus, you Force Touch the keyboard... And it will turn into I can't do it right now. It'll turn into a cursor. And then you can move it around just as if you had, arrow keys. There you go. So that's kind of cool. That gives you a ability to move the cursor around completely arbitrarily by force touching it. And that actually is a kind of a nice improvement. A lot of people have praised that. In fact, it's one of the reasons I tell people that the 6S and the 6S Plus are more than just a minor improvement to the 6. That Force Touch, they call it, I think, 3D Touch, really is an interesting addition to the iOS interface, particularly, probably mostly for that. So that is a somewhat of an improvement.
So it might be worth it. You wouldn't upgrade just for that, but the battery life also, I've heard.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, there'll be a 7 in the fall, if you can wait.
Yeah.
You know what? I actually left iOS for Android a few years ago because I was partly, but a lot because I was so frustrated with the Apple keyboard on iOS. I just could not type accurately. Still have trouble with it, but it has gotten better. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Apple actually has an article defending the lack of a delete key. Oh, wait a minute. Is this defending it or is this... No, this is just... post. And then somebody's pointed out the function delete deletes to the right of the cursor. Backwards delete one character at a time, a control H, in other words, or a backspace, is just the delete key. They should call it the backspace key. That would make Windows users happy. To forward delete, function plus delete. In fact, function option delete does a word forward at a time. Command delete deletes a line. And, of course, the command key is essentially a control key. Miller Tech in the chat room is telling me, I didn't know this. You can even use the cursor function on the iOS keyboards on earlier iPhones. I didn't know this. I don't have an earlier iPhone. When I moved to the 6S Plus, I gave my old 6 to my son, who promptly lost it in Barcelona. But that's another story for another day. But he says if you use two fingers, you can get on the keyboard. It looks dangerous because it looks like you're smooshing keys on the keyboard on the iPhone or the iPad. But if you use two fingers, it'll turn it into a cursor. Let me try it here. I guess I have to disconnect my iPad from my keyboard to do that. All right. Two fingers. Yeah, so you can do this. I'm sorry. That's cool. So even those of you with older iPhones, as long as you have iOS, I'm thinking it's iOS 9 on there, two fingers on the keyboard, and the keyboard goes blank, and now you can use it as a pointer. Nice feature. Very nice feature. I just did it on my iPad Pro, and it worked. You don't need to have force touch. 8888 Ask Leo, back to the phones we go, and Mike in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Hi, nice to talk to you. Long
Thanks.
Time, first time.
Thank you.
Hey, I have kind of you may be the man from the future, but I'm definitely a guy stuck in the past. I need a recommendation for a tablet. I work for a large insurance company, and I need to have password protected, email access, et cetera. I was looking for a tablet where I could do my continued education stuff to keep my licensure, but also access emails. My primary intent is to have the ability to read PDFs and download all my information for licensing to keep it active. But I know if I bring home a tablet, my fiance is going to want to play with it and do Facebook and everything else as well. So I need to have like multiple users or like a partition or something with protection.
That's something Apple has still not introduced. All Android tablets, if they're up to date, if they have the latest Android on them, will allow you to have multiple users.
Oh, okay. I know right now I have like an iPhone 5C and I use iBooks, but my screen's, making me cross-eyed trying to read everything.
Yeah. No, so that's good. So you're used to iOS. So you're comfortable with the idea of a tablet, of a touch screen, and you kind of understand the limitations as well.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what your continuing education requirements would be. It may be, for instance, that you have to do an online test or an online something that doesn't work on a tablet but does require a desktop. But if it's just reading PDFs, yeah, anybody can do that. That's not too hard. You might look at getting a Windows tablet, because certainly that'll do more.
Okay.
They're a little expensive. I really like the... I'm very happy with the Surface, Microsoft Surface.
Okay, like a Surface 3 or the Pro?
Either one. The 3 is less expensive. It's, it's more a little lower end, but it's still Windows. And the Pro, of course, is like a Windows PC. I have a Surface Book, which is kind of an interesting compromise. And a lot of companies make these now. They call them 2-in-1s or convertibles. They look like a laptop with a keyboard and everything, but you can detach the screen and use it as a tablet.
Okay.
Yeah, that's more expensive, but it's not a bad way to go if what you want is, are you replacing your laptop or this is just an adjunct?
I have a laptop basically for logging in and doing some email stuff.
Right.
But not any of the so much of the work-oriented things because obviously you got to protect personal information and whatnot. So,
you want something. I think the multiple accounts is exactly right because you want a business account that your girlfriend can't access. You want her to have her own account so that she doesn't mess with what your system is. And
they're getting mad at me for not sharing.
Yeah. No. Yeah, but that's the way it should be because this is going to be a work device.
Exactly.
And you might even, in an insurance business, have a fiduciary responsibility to keep some of this stuff private. So
that is exactly it.
Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense. It does eliminate iOS. As you know, there's not multiple accounts. There have been continuous rumors, and I think eventually iOS will have multiple accounts. But for right now, the way Apple thinks of it is one person, one device, period.
That's what I was feeling. And that's when I was looking at it, I just didn't see that as an option.
Yeah. So it means it's going to be Windows or Android. I have to say, having a full blown. Do you use Windows now on your desk on your laptop?
I use Windows at work, and like your last caller, I love the delete key and right click. I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, by the way, you can really simulate pretty well on a Macintosh. A right click, you just use a 3-button mouse; it'll work. And the delete key function backspace, or if actually on a Mac it's called delete, so function delete gives you a forward delete delete key.
I was taking notes. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can simulate, but you're right. If you're I am agnostic. I don't want anybody to get what they don't want. It's a personal computer. You get what you want. So it's really a choice. If you're getting an Android device, Samsung's got some new ones that are very nice. I like Google's own products. They're purer. You are going to want to make sure you get Marshmallow. That's Android 6.0 for this multiple user account capability.
Okay.
And I think they're very good. I'm really a fan of Android. There is an Android tablet from Google also that's very interesting called the Pixel C. I have the Pixel C and quite like it, although a lot of others don't. It's an Android tablet, but you can get a detachable keyboard for it, kind of like the Surface. So really, that's your choice, is should I get an Android tablet or a Windows tablet? And there's some excellent Windows tablet. Dell Venue Pro 8 just got updated. It's an 8-inch. It's small. It's very compact, if that's what you're looking for. But it's full Windows. That's another one to look at, yeah. There's some good choices out there, yeah.
Thank goodness. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm glad you called. Yeah, it sounds like you like Windows. I think it might be worth just getting a Windows tablet. This is really where Microsoft went. It's one of the reasons people didn't like Windows 8 is that they were kind of annoyed that they had all these tablet-y features in Windows 8. Whoops, let me just pull off my look at that, I crashed my computer by trying to pull the screen off. Okay, the Surface Book still has some work to do, but Lenovo and others make similar 2-in-1s where you can detach the keyboard, and the advantage of doing it this way is it's a real laptop keyboard, so you really have a laptop. The disadvantage is it's kind of a cumbersome tablet. It's going to be a bigger tablet. I really like what they've done with the Surface. And if you want smaller, if you want 8-inch, the Dell Venue is very nice. All right, time to take a little break. Coming up, we're going to talk to Dave in San Diego. Should he update his Macintosh? It's an older machine. I'll have some advice. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. Give me a ring. Let's talk tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Back to the phones we go. And Dave in San Diego. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. What's up?
I have an old iMac, and it's working fine, but somehow, when I get on a certain website, it kind of lags and so forth. And I checked through the Apple.com, and it seems like I could update to El Capitan.
Yeah.
But would it make it to how call
it? It wouldn't make it better. How old is the, first of all, how old is the laptop?
It's the iMac is 2010, I think I bought.
2010, 5 years old. And so it's running
Snow Leopard.
Okay.
10.6.
Certainly, for security reasons, if nothing else, you should update.
Mm-hmm.
Can't promise it'll get better, though. It's slow. When is it slow? It's slow just when you're surfing the net?
You know what? I hate this. A certain like website, you know, like newspaper website.
Oh, those might get faster. You're right. Those might get faster with a more up to date. Have you kept Safari up to date?
Yeah, Safari. Right. Normally, you know, the thing was, I'm using Chrome, and then they're giving me notice that it would only update until April this year.
Yeah. I think what you want to do, and this will almost...
And I get beach ball once in a while.
Yeah, I think this will help in general, which is back up your data, download El Capitan, and that's free, by the way, and you get it in the app store, and then wipe the drive and start fresh.
Ooh.
Now, that means you got to back up your data, but you're doing that anyway, right?
Yes, I have an external drive.
Yeah, but make sure you have a good backup before you do this. We don't want you to lose anything.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I want you to wipe your drive is the slowness could be just cruft lying around, but it also could be hard drive sector errors and that kind of thing. So the best way to do this, by the way, is to get a USB key big enough to hold the update, the El Capitan update. I think 8 gigs is big enough. And if you look online, you'll see once you download El Capitan, don't install it yet. You could, but I want you to have, besides a good backup, which you have, I want you to have the operating system on a USB key. So there is a way to make that USB key a bootable installer for El Capitan, and I would do that. Do you actually, 2008, you probably have a, do you have a...
2010.
2010, yeah. Do you have a super drive on that? Like a disc, an optical disc?
Yeah, it's got a DVD install. Yeah,
you could also put it on a DVD. I like it USB key.
Okay. So.
And then that way, you don't want to do this, do you? Why? Where's the pain coming
from? No. The wiping the drive, because obviously I still have some other, you know, Microsoft Office inside.
Yeah, you got to reinstall too. Yeah. It's the surest way to get your thing sped up.
Mm-hmm.
But you could try just going to El Capitan. One of the things El Capitan will do is you can have it replace your system folder. It'll make an old system folder, put everything in there. That by itself might be sufficient.
But it just gives me more function, and it just doesn't give me...
I think you'll be better off. I really do. And for security reasons alone, it's something to go to.
And since the iMac only has the 4... gig of RAM.
That's plenty.
Plenty?
Yep.
If I make it 8, would it go faster or better?
Might. Not surfing.
No.
4's not bad.
Okay.
I think you're all right. I think probably, you know, remember I was talking at the very beginning of the show that one of the biggest unknown, undiscovered problems with PCs in general, computers, and when I say PCs, I mean Macs or Windows, the hard drive. And that can really cause a slowdown. If you have some bad sectors on the hard drive, the computer labors to load those sectors. That takes time. That looks like it's a slowdown. Really what it is difficult to read hard drive. Just refreshing is always a good idea. It's time. It's been 5 years. I understand it's a pain. Just remember to deactivate any software you've got on there. Download, you know, Windows, Microsoft Office now is downloadable. There's just a lot of things you could do. Try a standard update first. See if that helps. Might be the slowdown is just, you know, system software is corrupt or old or not working well. Somebody's in the chat room saying, and this is true, but on an iMac it's not an easy thing to do. Replacing your spinning drive with an SSD, that makes a huge difference. I could take a 2010 iMac and make it feel like it's brand new. Problem is with the iMac, changing hard drives is hard. It is not easy. It requires a giant suction cup. That's all I mean, that should tell you enough that you don't need to know more. Nathan, you want me to do a Carbonite ad here, or should I go on with another call? All right. You're a nice guy. He's a nice guy. Nathan's very generous. He says, go ahead. Talk to Rick and Phelan. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
Too bad. Listen. I got a problem with Adobe Flash.
Yeah, who doesn't? I got a problem with Adobe Flash, too. What's your problem?
I've heard good. I've heard bad. I've heard indifferent. I've currently deleted all the program from my computer. Problem is I can't run certain...
Yeah, you can't go to websites that use Flash, including, I might add, some of our video streaming partners.
Okay.
So here's the deal. Flash was great in its time. It was great in its time, but there are a few problems with Flash. One, Adobe was not a very good steward of Flash, and there were lots of bugs in Flash Adobe didn't fix, security flaws. Adobe has finally gotten around to saying, oh, yeah, I guess we better keep this thing up to date. Because remember, and I've said this many times, anything that goes on the Internet, any software that runs when you're on the Internet must be secure. It turns out that because Windows was getting updated so regularly, it became more and more secure. So the bad guys had to find other ways to get onto your system. And Flash, ooh, that was a good one. So was Adobe Reader, for that matter. Adobe really fell down, I think, on the job. They've fixed that now. Flash gets updated. But there's another problem. It's a pig. It's slow. It slows your machine down. And Apple really put the final nail in the coffin when Steve Jobs decided not to allow Flash at all on iOS. So no iPhone or iPad can even do Flash. He thought, and he was right, that by eliminating Flash, he could make his systems faster. The chips didn't have to support it. It wouldn't be the pig that it was. It would make the iPad feel more responsive. And I think he knew in his heart that the iPad, that iOS would be so successful, the iPhone would be so successful, that websites and others would have to adapt, would have to find an alternative to Flash. He didn't really like Adobe for some good reasons and some not so good reasons. Adobe decided to do some things that Apple didn't like too much. Steve Jobs kind of very famously was a cranky individual at times. And it's widely believed he took he aimed his sights on Adobe. That's when they went out and they bought Final Cut so that they could undercut Adobe's video editing product. That's when they went out and developed Aperture so they could undercut Adobe's photography application. They really went after Adobe. And I think some say that Steve's animosity towards Flash, some of it's technical, but some of it was personal. For whatever reason, Flash is going away. Even Adobe is abandoning it. The best way to use Flash, here's the answer to your question, on any machine is not to install it. And if you uninstall it, fine. When you need to go to a website that has Flash, use either Firefox or Chrome. Chrome, for a long time, has included Flash in it, Google's Chrome browser. It's a great browser, highly recommended anyway. And because it comes with Flash and sandboxes Flash, keeps it from accessing the rest of the system, and most importantly, keeps Flash up to date automatically, it's a much safer way to use Flash. So I say get Chrome, and if there's a site you need to use that has Flash, use Chrome. You'll get the best experience. I think, and I may be wrong, I'll have to check, but I believe Firefox started doing the same thing. That's another third-party browser. I love Safari. I think it's a great browser. Apple's done a great job with it. But it does still require, if you want to go to a Flash site, the installation of Flash on your desktop. Not a good idea. No, Firefox still has to, you still have to manually install Flash. All right, well, if you need Flash, don't install it. Don't download it. Don't get it from the Adobe site. Just use Google Chrome. That's the only, in my opinion, safe way to use Flash these days. And you cannot use Flash on mobile. By the way, Adobe doesn't support it on Android anymore either. It's just too slow. So you can only use it on the desktop. 8888-ASK. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after news. IE has it automatically installed. That's what it was. All right, I'm going to do a little ad here for PillPack, a better pharmacy. I love this idea. This is another example of technology just really changing our whole way of thinking. In this case, PillPack eliminates your pharmacy with a better way. If you are on meds or you take over-the-counter medications, vitamins, PillPack simplifies it. It's a 24/7 pharmacy, which is awesome. In fact, you can call a pharmacist at PillPack any time of the day or night and without any embarrassment, ask them questions about your medication. Your PillPack, though, is mailed to you, and this is what's so cool, and it's mailed to you in this really neat PillPack container. Oops, somebody's messed with my PillPack here. It is a dispenser, And note, this is really cool. Each individual package has your medication in it with a day, a time, and a date. So you know, you tear it off, you take your meds, you know if you've taken them, you never know, you know, you don't ever have to worry. They use robots in conjunction with human pharmacists to make sure you've got exactly the right medications. They even put on the box pictures of each pill and what it is and the directions your doctor prescribed. This couldn't be better. Plus, when you need refills, don't worry. PillPack will automatically send you the refill. They work with your doctor to make sure that your refills are managed so you never run out. And you know what's great about this? No extra cost. Beyond, you know, whatever you're already paying for the copay. The shipping's even free. It's compatible with most major insurance plans, including most forms of Medicare Part D. When you sign up for PillPack, they make sure your insurance is compatible before they transfer your medications over. But it is really easy. They check. They say yes. You switch. You'll sign up on the secure site. They take care of everything. Time magazine called this one of their top 25 inventions of the year. Jill Duffy, my friend, gave it a great review on PC Magazine. I love this. And if you've got family members who are taking medication who can't remember if they've taken it or, you know, which is, believe me, easy to do, this is a great solution. They even have a medication reminder for the iPhone and the Apple Watch. PillPack. You know, here's what I want you to do. Go to PillPack.com/twit. PillPack.com, PillPack.com/twit. Sign up now. It's a beautiful site. Only takes about 5 minutes to sign up. And when you use our link and transfer your prescriptions to PillPack, you'll get a credit for $20 worth of vitamins and OTCs. No more pill boxes. You got your pill pack, baby. This is so brilliant. And as I said, a pharmacist always on call 24/7, so you can always ask those questions. It's a great way to do it. They'll transfer it right over for you. And look, they got the app and everything. Pill pack. I love this. PillPack.com/twit. $20 credit towards vitamins and OTCs if you transfer over now. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can also reach us via Skype. If you use Skype out, call that number. Shouldn't cost you anything. Website, really useful. Keep the website in mind. It's techguylabs.com. And we put everything from the show there, all the notes, everything, including audio and video after the show so you can watch it in Flash. No, actually, it's on YouTube. So, hey, you don't need Flash anymore. TechGuyLabs.com, and that is free, by the way. I don't make you sign up for anything. I don't want your email address. I don't want your money. We have fine sponsors. They make this all possible. TechGuyLabs.com. Eddie in Austin, Texas. Hi, Eddie. Leo Laporte.
Hey, Leo.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I've been a long time supporter of your broadcast network. I was interested in talking to you about carrier sense updates. What does that mean? I mean, I consider myself to be a pretty tech savvy guy. I mean, I have a degree in computer science. I worked at IBM and research for like 15 years. It's like, wait a minute, hold on. This update that I've had on a platform for like over 6 years has started coming up about the same time that CISA got passed into law. It's like, what is this good? Is this okay? I mean, I looked it up. I mean, I tried to look it up. Apple says I should do it, but I'm like,
yes, you should do it.
I should do it.
Yeah. So the idea is as I understand, and by the way, it is very technical. I don't understand it either. But as I understand it, our Ethernet networks are a collision-based system. You know that much, right? Because you are an engineer.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
So that means when you have an Ethernet network, all the packets are transmitted, and think of them as little ping pong balls that bounce off of each other. But it's resistant to that, and traffic gets through. Although because there are collisions, It means it can be slowed down a little bit. In fact, it's one of the reasons if you have an Ethernet network, you segment it. If you get too many nodes on an Ethernet network, the collisions will really slow it down. So you divide it up into chunks, into segments, and that gives you more speedy network, fewer collisions.
Well, okay. I understand the collision thing. Yeah. Okay.
So this is what CSMA does, is avoids collisions by waiting. Over.
But I don't have a problem with collisions, though.
I know. I don't know why they're doing this.
I can make phone calls. Why can't Apple? I mean, this is. I've had iPhones for like the last 6 years. Why can't Apple put a little checkbox that says, "Do not ask me this again"? Because I don't.
Well, why don't you want to use it?
Well, because, like I said, I mean, CISA got passed into law.
Right.
And it's like, it's one of those things. And by the way, you're worried
about the privacy concerns.
I should preface this by saying I am a security now listener.
Ah, so you're a paranoid tinfoil hat wearing.
Yeah. Well, I don't think I'm too much of a paranoid. But the one thing is, like, if other people are getting this message too, it's like, what should we do about it?
Yeah.
Is it a cause for concern, or is this techno panic?
You know, yes. And so you obviously do listen to shows, because techno panic is a phrase used on another one of our shows by Jeff Jarvis. Mm-hmm. And the two of them, Steve Gibson and Jeff Jarvis, represent opposite ends of the spectrum. Jeff loves all technology, and he says that it's not unusual when new technology comes along that people will go, think of the children, think of the women and children. This technology is going to ruin everything. That's techno panic, and usually it wears off, goes away, and we've gotten used to zippers and Jacquard looms, and soon we'll be used to internet access and smartphones. So that's the one side of the argument. Steve Gibson, who is certainly no Luddite, doesn't hate technology.
No.
But is very aware of the privacy and security implications, because he's a security guy. And so he will tell you, all of the things that can go wrong. As I was saying earlier, the set of things that can go wrong is much larger than the set of things that do go wrong. And I think, you know, there's an analog to this that happened in the 70s when parents started hearing about child abductions. And it really coincided with the rise of cable news networks. And so all of this stuff was heavily publicized, stranger danger. And we stopped letting our kids walk home from school. We stopped letting our kids play at playgrounds. We started becoming a very paranoid society. And I was one of them.
You know what my favorite one was?
What?
It was Halloween. It was the Halloween thing.
Yeah, the razor blades and the apples.
When there was actually no...
It never happens. But the thing is, it happens once. Somebody dopes Tylenol once. People get sick. But because of, we're all wired now together, we hear everything that happens thanks to cable news and the internet now. And so one incident is enough to kind of create this global fear. One guy tries to set his shoes on fire and explode an airplane, and no longer can we have to take our shoes off to get on an airplane.
Right.
And so I think that a lot of computer security is analogous to this, where, yes, there are potential issues. Yes, sometimes bad things happen. But some of the danger is overblown and some of it isn't. For instance, CryptoLocker, which is that nasty virus malware that encrypts your hard drive, I think a lot of people got bit by that. And so that is something to be very aware of and to be very careful of.
Yes, it is. I've even gone through a share of social engineering stuff and going,
Now I'm not sure. You're talking probably more about this technology that was being used. Who's your carrier? Is it Verizon?
AT&T.
AT&T.
Mm-hmm.
There are. What was it called? Carrier Sense. This technology that was being used by carriers.
I don't know. I looked.
They gave you a unique ID, and they exposed that unique ID.
I'm just getting an update. I'm getting on a daily basis a dialogue that says, update carrier since. There's a new sensor.
Oh.
How is there a new sensor?
No, that's fine. Don't worry about carrier sense in that regard. I think one of the reasons Apple's pushing it and carriers are pushing it is it allows them to put more people on the same cell sites. You know, and I'm not fully educated on this, so this is just my guess. And if somebody wants to call and explain this, I'd appreciate it. But the idea...
I mean, like I said, I'm a fan of security now.
I'll ask Mr. Gibson what he thinks of this. I think this is just so that they can get more people on the same cell sites with fewer collisions. In other words, make your calls more robust, make your data more robust, but still have more people using it. It avoids these slowdowns. I mean, I'm looking at the various articles about it. That's my guess. It's a probabilistic media access control protocol in which a node verifies the absence of other traffic before transmitting on a shared medium. You know, when we're hams, as a ham, I know this. This is something you do manually. As a human, you go over and out. And you don't, because with the hams, you can have what they call a pileup with everybody transmits at once. So you learn as a human to wait for a gap and then transmit. That's all the cell phones, all the cell signals are doing. They're waiting till there's a pause in the action and then transmitting. I don't think this is harmful. Go ahead and update it. CSMA is what they're calling it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number as we continue to help you wend your way through the confusing world of technology. It's interesting what people worry about. Some people worry because the Macintosh doesn't have a true delete key. Some people worry about carrier sense multiple access technology. And some people are just trying to get their printer to work. And we cover it all here. That's what we cover the waterfront. 8888-ASK-LEO, the number. Ellie is in Honolulu. Hello, Ellie.
Aloha, Leo.
Aloha. Are you getting the snowstorm in Honolulu?
Oh, yeah, sure, right. Only on the Weather Channel and CNN.
Do you get a little bit of schadenfreude when you see all that snow falling on the East Coast and you're there and it's balmy and the ocean breeze is blowing?
I don't miss snow for anything, yeah. And I'm sitting here going, yeah, more, more, more.
My wife is the same way. She says, I'll never live where there's snow. I grew up in snow, like you did, I'm sure, and I think it's fine. I like it, but I have to admit, it's nice not having to shovel the sidewalk anymore.
And I don't have a doorbell, so can you still get that Ring thing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It has a big battery in it, and it has a battery that lasts a year. So I was thinking of putting it on the bedroom door. Who's there? Go away! Wouldn't that be cool?
That's great.
Yeah. So what can I do for you, Ellie?
You know, the Apple Watch doesn't have any kind of voice recorder in it.
Yes, it does.
Is there anything you can get and put in glances so if somebody is hassling you, you could just say, push the thing and nobody will know that you're...
Yeah, well, you'll have to check the laws in Hawaii on that one. But, yes, in fact, I use it and I love it. It's called Just Press Record. It's an iPhone app. If you haven't... You have an Apple Watch, Ellie?
I don't, but my partner does.
So I love this thing. And so what it does on the Apple Watch... is when you turn it on, you can actually make it what they call the complication. You know, on the Apple Watches, they have the little doohickeys around the face. They have little things for a calendar, for a stopwatch. This Just Press Records, $1.99 in the App Store. If you put it on the watch, you get a little microphone complication. When you tap it, the microphone pops up. You press the microphone. You could do all of this under your sleeve. You wouldn't have to anybody know that. And it starts recording. It's awesome.
It works in glances, though, right?
It also has a glances thing, but you don't need glances because it's a complication, which means you can record right from the watch face.
Oh, okay.
Completely surreptitiously. Nobody needs to know you're doing it. Again, check your local laws before you record people.
Right.
But then, and by the way, the watch microphone is pretty good. After you've stopped recording, it's as you're recording, it's going up both to the cloud and to the application on your iPhone. So I just, let's see if this worked, because I just recorded what I just said here. Let me see if it's going to open this up. Is this what I just... No, this is something
no,
else.
No, I wasn't watching. It's the sport watch, and I broke out from the aluminum, and so I have to get stainless steel.
Yeah. Now, well, now, Ellie, you're blind. You're blind, steel. Aren't you, Ellie? I seem to remember that.
Legally, yeah. I have some vision.
You have some vision. Okay.
Right.
And we've talked. The reason I know that is because we've talked before about how good Apple is on
accessibility. Yeah.
So, yeah, sure. If you can see the watch well enough to use it. It does have some accessibility features, but I think the watch is kind of more designed for people who can see, I would think. There's a lot of little stuff.
Right.
But so this Just Press Record is pretty amazing. There's the glance version of it. It's $1.99.
There's a free version and there's a pay version.
No, I think it's $1.99, but trust me, you're going to want it.
Okay.
Here, let me play. I just recorded what we were saying. Listen, I'm playing it back from my iPhone now.
You could do all of this under your sleeve. You wouldn't have to anybody know that. And it starts recording.
That's recorded.
Wow, that sounds good.
From the watch.
Wow, that sounds really good.
You don't need glasses because it's a complication, which means you can record right from the watch.
Isn't that amazing?
Wow, that's good.
I'm sold. And that, by the way, it took a little time, took a few seconds, but it copied over to my iPhone automatically.
Wow. Can you get it on the Mac, too? You know, does it forward to that?
No, but there are other things, similar things to that, I think.
So can you email it to yourself?
Yeah. Like it's got a share. It also goes to iCloud. So you know how I found out about it? So there was a kid in the studio wanted to interview me for his sixth grade school report. So he started asking questions and started typing my answers into his iPhone. I said, hold on there. That's going to take a little while. Why don't I record this on my watch and send you the recording? And I did. And there's a little share button. And I pressed share. I said, enter your email address here. And I mailed him the recording of our interview. It was amazing.
Wow, that's neat.
Yeah.
So it's Just Press Record, it's called.
Just Press Record. Wait a minute. Scooter X in our chat room has done the Google thing. He says they have a Mac OS version, too.
Wow,
and I
cool.
would guess, that's $4.99. I would guess... Yes, it does. It ties in to your iPhone and iPad as well. So if you're using, man, I'm going to put this everywhere because I'm a radio guy, right? The ability to record.
Oh, yeah, you have to.
I used to have to walk around with a tape recorder, 20-pound tape recorder slung over my shoulder and a big old microphone. Now I just go, talk into the watch, sir. Just speak into the watch. And I got an interview. I got what they call an actuality. It's from Open Planet.
Max is a little smart here.
Yeah. I have my phone. Would you believe my watch? It's Just Press Record. It's from Open Planet Software. It is $4.99 on the desktop, $1.99 on iOS. Highly recommended, Ellie.
Thank you so much.
And it's okay to say aloha at the end of our call, too, right?
Right.
Aloha. Stay warm.
Aloha.
I want to move to Hawaii. I really do. That's where I'm going. Gary is in Cape Cod. Hi, Gary.
Leo, thank you so much for taking my call. Actually, I'm a truck driver. I'm in Sparks right now, looking west at the Sierra Escarpment. Beautiful day for my fellow truckers. It's just wet on top of Donner.
Beautiful.
Pretty. Yeah. Real pretty. Before I get to my passphrase question, can I briefly revisit an issue from last week?
You can. I have 70 seconds before the bottom of the hour, but we'll take you around to the next segment if you want.
Okay, limit conditions on autonomous trucks.
Yes.
One is stuff the human cannot do. When I'm going north on 99, it's a tool fog. I cannot drive safely. I cannot see.
There's no IFR for trucks. You can't fly in the fog. Okay.
If you have an infrared camera tied into your autonomous controller, that's perfectly doable. Now, the other limit is stuff that the computer cannot do. If I'm going up Donner, I have to put chains on. The autonomous vehicle cannot do that. You need a human.
No, I hope we never see trucks driving alone without a driver. That'd be terrifying. But I think we're getting to the day where, I mean, that's what it kind of like a train. I think we're getting to the day where we're going to see autonomous of some kind. You know, I'm about to, we're going to take a break and we'll talk more, but I'm about to buy a Tesla that I could press a button. It will park itself in the garage. And when I want it, I can summon it. It will come to me from the garage. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Stand by. We'll get back to you right after this word. Whoa. Look at that snow. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking with Gary. He's in Sparks, just coming over the escarpment, whatever that means. That's truck driver talk. I don't know what that means. But
actually, ask your dad. That's geology talk.
It's geology talk. You're right. I remember escarpments from my childhood, so and I still get a chill. So I was mentioning that this new Tesla thing, they call it Summon, that Tesla says now you can't use this off your property because it's still illegal to do this. But the idea is the car will park itself in the garage, close the garage door, and then you press the Summon button, the door opens, the car pulls out. And comes to your front door and says, you know, and the door opens and says, hop in, which is a little creepy, but it'll do that. Actually, I can't wait. But they say, don't do this off your property because you'll probably be violating local laws.
Well, it only if you get caught, but it doesn't matter unless it's properly color coordinated. I think for you, what you need is the graphite paint with a red leather upholstery.
Oh, if they had red leather, I'd get it. They don't have red leather or yellow leather. They only have black, white, and tan.
I think white and tan would be nice for you.
I agree. Thank you for you. Will you come when I get it? Which won't be probably for years, because you know they just started making them. When I get it, come on over. We'll go for a drive. One of the reasons I want to get this Tesla is because I really feel like this is going to be the first fully autonomous vehicle that they're going to push a software update, and it's just going to drive.
Well, you know, I think semi-autonomy in the vehicles has got to be a big boost on safety.
It's already happening. And as a truck driver, I think you probably want that, right? You must
absolutely.
See
–
you see horrendous behavior.
I have adaptive cruise. I have a radar.
I do, too. I love that.
And I can adjust the safety cushion. I can disable it if the need arises, but it's just increases safety so much and reduces driver fatigue so much.
You know, I wish I'd had it when I was commuting because stop and go traffic just wears you out. But this adaptive cruise control, and I've used it in stop and go traffic, it literally will keep a good following distance. It will stop the car if the car in front of you stops. It does probably a much better job than I would do. It's certainly more attentive. It's pretty amazing. And the Tesla will change lanes too. If you wanted to change lanes for you, and I don't think I'll do this. You do the turn signal, and then it looks for an opening. It's got sensors all around it, has radar. When it sees an opening, it makes the change of the lanes. I think I would be hovering my hands over the wheel if it does that, because that makes me very nervous.
Well, I think joysticks are better than wheels.
Do they have joysticks in trucks yet?
Nope, not yet. But I'm rooting for it.
That's how they steer big ships.
I think it's a better input device.
Yeah, I agree. And we're all used to it now from playing video games. Anyway, what can I do for you, Gary?
Yes, I just upgraded from my 5 to the 6S Plus, 128 megabytes.
Nice
gigabytes.
Top of the line. Gigabytes. Top of the line, my friend.
But what I lost is my ability to have a passphrase. Right now, all I can do is put in that six-digit number.
Yeah.
Back a year ago, 2 years ago, it was trivial for a forensics software package to crack the four-digit code.
Six is a little better.
Four-digit code in less than 24 hours.
Yeah, no,
now,
well.
I'm sure the forensics packages can do a six-digit code in less than 24 hours.
Judging from how people are complaining, law enforcement has been complaining about Apple of late, and even in some states passing or trying to pass laws prohibiting Apple from encrypting its phones, I think that probably works pretty well. Remember, six digits is more than 50% better. than four digits. It gives you 999,999 choices. In other words, basically a million choices of passcode. And you can easily, and I would recommend this, turn on the feature that after 10 wrong tries, wipe the phone.
Right.
You combine that with fingerprint recognition, which is really excellent on the iPhone. I think you, and default, in fact, you can't turn it off, encryption of all your data. I feel like this is a pretty secure device. I wouldn't worry about the passphrase.
I don't have fingerprint actuated on my open and close, because you they can't make you give you. They can't.
You are deeply paranoid, Gary.
Well, no, not really.
I also listen
to security now.
Yeah. That makes people paranoid. So let me explain that. The courts have held that, you know, of course, you have a right against what is the Bill of Rights?
Self-incrimination.
So you have a right against the Fifth Amendment, the right against self-incrimination. Right. Which means they cannot compel you to give up your passcode. They can't say, Gary, you're a bad man, and you must give me your passcode. You could say, nope, I plead the Fifth, and that's it. That's done. They can, however, get your fingerprint. Courts have ruled. They could take a hair sample for DNA without your permission. Furthermore, they can make you press the fingerprint button. The courts have ruled.
That's right.
Not self-incrimination any more than a fingerprint is self-incrimination. So I understand your rationales. However, I still think that if you make it a race after 10 tries, you're pretty safe. The chances of 10 in a million, it's not quite Powerball odds, but it's pretty good.
Yeah. Off air, Leo, you mentioned quinoa. I think the best use for quinoa is when you make a meatloaf and substitute the quinoa for the breadcrumbs.
I have become I mocked quinoa for years. But of late, I've become a quinoa fan.
Yeah. I was tempting you a little bit because I know you've become mostly vegetarian.
I don't eat meatloaf, but I could have some nut loaf with quinoa. You know what I had the other night?
Go.
The other night, I made, instead of spaghetti, I had quinoa and spaghetti sauce, and it was quite delicious. A little weird?
Delicious. It sounds delicious. Now, I don't have technopanic. I don't have technopanic because I'm a technophile.
Good man.
I don't have no collisions because I drive 18-wheelers.
You better not. A collision in an 18-wheeler is not an insignificant event.
Leo, thank you for your time.
It's so good to talk to you. Thank you for calling, Gary. I really appreciate it. And thanks for your patronage. 8888, Ask Leo, the phone number. Dick DiBartolo actually coming up in just a few minutes from New York City. Disneyland. He's our gadget guy, but I got to get a weather report. They've shut the city down. The great blizzard of 2016. Bobby in Huntington Beach, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bobby.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a old school. This new way of music is kind of baffling. We had to replace our old Bose music system.
Yes.
Because the CD died.
Okay.
So I went in and bought a new Bose home theater, although we don't have it hooked up to the TV or anything because it's in the living room for music.
Okay.
And so I had, because it doesn't come with a CD player anymore, I burned all my CDs onto my computer.
You could, by the way, buy a CD player and attach it to the back. It will support that.
Yeah. But that's another cost. I mean, they should.
Oh, I don't know. They're not that expensive. You spent $2,500 on the Bose. Spend $30 on a CD player. All right, so you burned your CDs, which I think is a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or ripped them,
so
I should say.
I have it on iTunes, and I have an iPad, and I tried to sync it, so I can get my.
Yeah, you try to get your music onto your iPad from iTunes. Yeah.
My iPad won't. I have too many.
It's full.
It won't take it.
It's full. Hold on a second. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. Leo Laporte, it's full. You need more space. Erase something. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There's snacks on the plane. Actually, if you've ever had the plane snacks, you wish there weren't snacks on the plane. That's worse than snakes on a plane. These are the snacks I adore from NatureBox.com. When hunger strikes, don't reach for that half-eaten bag of chips or a package of Oreos. Be prepared with smart and delicious snacks. This is one of the things I've discovered, that is key to weight loss, is having healthy stuff around the house so you don't eat the bad stuff. And I'm always happy to have some Nature Box. Nature Box snacks are delivered monthly in a very nice box with high-quality ingredients you can trust. They have delicious food, and it means eating better does not mean giving up on flavor. Look at garden tomato crunchies, tomato-flavored almonds. See, these are perfect for me. You could choose from vegan, no sugar added, non-GMO options. They have flavors that are savory, sweet, salty, and tart. Hundreds of snacks now on the site at naturebox.com. And you pick the ones you want. Blueberry almond quinoa bites. You're talking about quinoa. How nice is that? Coffee kettle popcorn. Oh, garlic plantains. Oh, man. Oh, baby. Black and white granola, cocoa, and vanilla flavored granola. I love these. Italian bistro pretzels, garlic and Parmesan cheese flavored pretzel. And this is just a sample. How about getting your first box half off? How about that? Go to naturebox.com/twit. 50% off your first box right now. For work and for home, we love NatureBox. And I just tell you what, when my NatureBox arrives, it is a happy day around the LaPorte household. NatureBox.com/twit. Get half off your first box right now, but you have to go to that website. NatureBox. Yum! Yum! That should be their slogan. NatureBox. Yum! Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. We've been talking to Bobby in Huntington Beach. She wants to put all her music on her iPad, but it's full. Is it full?
Well, no. It's just that I have too much music. Because I don't have really anything on the iPad.
Ah. Yeah, well, it's possible to have hundreds of gigabytes of music once you rip all those CDs and not be able to fit them on the iPad. So now what you can do, there's a couple of check marks in iTunes. There's let me manually manage my music, which means you can literally just drag the files you want over. Or, and this is what you probably should do, use playlists. You can synchronize by playlist. So, for instance, when I travel, I can't get all my music on my iPhone either, but I like to listen to classical music when I'm in the airplane. It soothes me. It relaxes me. I can sleep to it. I don't want rock and roll in there. I want classical. So I make a playlist on iTunes. Yeah. What I do is I search for the genre classical. It finds all my classical songs, and then you select them, drag them into a playlist called classical, and then in the synchronization settings, you can say, normally it says synchronize everything, but you could say just synchronize classical music.
What about putting it onto the cloud? Like, and I'm looking.
You can stream it. So for 20, yeah, you can do this too, but you need to be online when you're listening. So, and I recommend this. This is actually a good deal. Apple has something called. There's two ways you can do this. Apple has Music Match. That's $25 a year. It'll match everything in your collection. Keep a cloud copy. Then you just stream it on your phone or your iPad. And as long as you have internet and it's fast enough, that's great because it's not on your device. So you
can. Have to do is you go to the Bose, you download this Bose app, and everything is for the Bose system is through that app, and where you go to your music library.
You can't do that with the Bose app. You have to do that with Apple's own music app, but it's on there.
But if I had and I was looking at Google Play because that's free.
Okay, so this is another choice, yes.
and then on the Bose app, when it says add music, I go in there and I go to that the cloud or
yeah,
wherever.
If it supports, does it support Google Cloud?
I don't know, but I hope so.
So this is unfortunately the problem with Apple and the iPhone is it's hard for one application to access data from another application. So you have to check in the Bose app to see where that music can live. If they support Dropbox or Google Cloud or some other solution, then that would be a great way to do it. I see. So what you want to do is play from your phone to your Bose speaker system.
Through the iPad, through using the Bose app.
So that's the only way to do it. I get it now. They don't support AirPlay. Yeah. If they supported AirPlay, and some speaker systems do, you wouldn't have this problem. It'd play anything you could play on your iPad, you could play on the Bose. But it doesn't.
I don't have AirPlay on my iPad.
It makes me mad. Well, you do, but the Bose doesn't support it. That makes me a little bit mad because Bose only supports their own system. So you just have to go with whatever they support. And if there's a cloud system that they work with, then you can use it. They may have their own cloud system. I don't know. I'm sorry to say. We have a Bose. We do, in fact, have that Bose home entertainment unit. But I haven't ever tried playing music from my iPad to it. So I don't know.
What I did is I added my music library.
Yeah.
And it recognizes it from my computer.
Oh, good.
If I have the app on my computer and on my iPad.
Yeah,
the iPad's
a different beast. Yeah, because a computer can see everything on the computer. The way Apple sets up iOS, applications can't just look around and say, hey, what do you got? They have to actually support it. So I'm afraid I can't help you here. You're going to have to do whatever the Bose app says it will do, I'm sorry to say. And that might be more limited than what you can do on your computer. You know, I'll tell you what, I'm going to have to do some research on this, Bobby, because I don't know what the Bose app is capable of. No one does. No, I'm sorry, I'm just kidding. Next time, or for those of you listening, that's an important consideration. If you want to stream music from an iOS device, get a device that supports either Bluetooth. Check and see if it supports Bluetooth, Bobby. If it does, you're golden. Or Apple's solution, which is AirPlay. If your speaker system supports either of those, that'll be great. The final thing you could do, of course, is just use a cable connecting your headphone jack from your iPad into the Bose system, and that's always going to work. It just means you can't wander around the house with your iPad. Hey, look who's here, my friend Dickie D, Dick D Bartolo, who is in snowbound New York City. He's locked in. Mayor de Blasio came over and locked the door, said you can't leave.
No. But I did. I snuck out.
How is it?
It's wild out, but it's kind of fun. You know, I said to Dennis, we can't stay in all day. Let's go down to the marina. So we did, and there must be 500 people in the park. So you can't stop New Yorkers. There's no traffic, so you can just walk in the
street. Well, as I understand it, the governor, by the way, it's the governor, not the mayor who did this, but the governor's not saying you can't walk around, just you can't drive.
No traffic.
Which is better. You can walk down the middle of, you know, Fifth Avenue.
Well, watch out for these speeding snowplows, but outside of that...
They do move fast, don't they?
Yeah. And there are a lot of them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so it was fun.
I do see a lot. I'm watching CNN, and I see a lot of people walking around. I mean, that's fun in New York.
Oh, absolutely.
Until it melts, gets dirty.
Oh, yeah, tomorrow's going to be a lot of laughs.
Enjoy the fresh snow. Dick usually joins us this week, not to talk about the weather, although I'm always willing, but to talk about a gadget or two. He's the Giz Whiz.
That is correct, and I'm going to talk about Zolt. Do you know about Zolt?
I have a Zolt, and I love it!
Okay. You know what? It's so funny. This is like the fourth time I did the Epson with the tanks.
I'm catching up to you.
I got that, and then last week, I forgot what it was you said. Wait, I love that.
I keep this in my man purse.
I don't have a man purse. I'll put that on the list. No man purse.
Or you could call it a manned bag. I've been told it's a manned bag, not a manned purse.
A manned bag sounds a lot better.
Yeah.
And for me, it's a man sea bag because I'm a boater.
So tell, yes. A sea bag. So, yeah, there you
okay,
go.
Well, you're going to, so Zolt is one single device that will be the power for your computer. And they support, they say, up to 90% of all laptops on the market. And that takes up one USB port on this little 3-ounce device. Then there are two more USB outputs. So you can drag that along, charge your cell phone, charge your tablet. So basically, instead of carrying the brick that came with your computer, you carry the GoZolt. The plug folds up into the base. If the plug is facing the wrong way at the hotel room, the plug can rotate 90 degrees so the cables face in a direction that you want. And it's just an easy way to carry far less adapters and plugs and stuff.
I just love
when
this.
You
now,
go on the road.
It's not as high wattage, perhaps, as your adapter for your laptop. So it might charge
it
more
goes
slowly.
Up to 70 watts.
And that's total, including the USB. But still, the convenience for this thing is phenomenal. And they even have a MagSafe adapter for the Apple, which is unusual.
Yes, that's $20 extra for the that.
But
and it comes with the little travel bag, which I see. I believe
I have
using.
The whole set, man. I got.
Boy,
the...
you don't go anywhere. But well, you have the one with the gold wing doors. I didn't even know they made that.
They're called Falcon wings, please.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
No, I think this is a clever idea, and because it's cast aluminum. Of course, these things get hot as they, this aluminum really acts as a heat.
As a heat sink. Yeah.
And so they can make it a little bit smaller than a traditional brick. A lot lighter than the Dell brick that I carry around with my Dell. So that's why I have it with me. So I can, go to the coffee shop, plug this in. Great at airports, too, where you have limited plugs and you can charge your phone and your laptop. That's nice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you get 8 different adapters, and as I said, they said that it covers 90% of the laptops out there now.
That's the big issue. I wish laptops didn't have so many crazy adapters.
Isn't that ridiculous?
That's insane. They don't have a Type-C, which disappoints because I think we're going to see more of that. But you know what they do with the Apple is they actually just make a separate cable, which they charge separately for. I bet they'll do that with a Type-C.
They'll probably do that.
Yeah. Because that's going to be a common. Z-O-L-T. And what is it, like Get Zolt or Go Zolt?
It's Go Zolt.
Go Zolt. Go Zolt.
.com.
Yeah, Zolt is like Volt with a Z.
Very good. Wow.
I like this. You know, they just sent this to me out of the blue. I didn't actually buy it. I never even heard of it. And they sent this to me out of the blue. And, you know, a lot of times when I get this stuff, I just go, yeah, right. But this thing, I've been really using it. I love it.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I even carry other tips with me for reasons no one understands. Just in case I meet a Toshiba.
Yes, exactly. Right. I know. I have so much. I carry so much stuff. Down
I
at
do.
The boat.
That's why I have a sea bag.
Yes. You know, I took an anti-clutter class, and the instructor said, the more imagination you have, the more crap you have.
Oh, because that's it.
You can think of more reasons why you have to carry stuff.
Dick's at gizwiz.biz. That's his website, gizwiz.biz. Play the What the Heck Is It contest. And don't forget the weekly Gizwiz show at gizwiz.tv. Thank you, Dickie D. Thank you, everybody.
Sir.
We'll see you next time. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight, and of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.